Come by later, or tomorrow?
I'll come by tonight. You all right?
It's the second time he's asked. He's too sharp not to know. I will be, I promise. I can't wait to see you.
Hang tight. I'll be by later.
I'll leave a key under the mat. I'm not expecting him until after midnight, so while I wait, I lie around in his dress shirt and my white-purple-lettered peace socks, eating popcorn with Gina, exhausted after telling her about my day and trying to tune out with a little bit of TV, when Saint arrives, only a little past 8 p.m. He seems to have come straight from work, still in his business suit, exuding testosterone. And I notice the first thing he notices are the R and M necklaces on my throat. He looks bigger right now, harder, and like something I want to hold on to so much I feel dizzy. Dizzy and safe. For the first time today, I feel safe. Sin, I signal down at myself, and as I do, his eyes move over me and heat up every inch they cover. I'm not dressed, I was staying in.
I'm staying in with you, he shuts the door. Hey, Gina.
Oh, groan. Are you guys gonna... Gina sets down the popcorn bowl on the table and trails off delicately, looking from one to the other for an answer. Neither Malcolm nor I bite. Then plainly, she growls,
Do I have to leave?
Yes, my body screams, but I can't make her leave for us to fool around. That's just bad friend etiquette. It's fine, Gina.
I'll be in my room. Bye, Saint.
She heads over and shuts the door, and I glare at him playfully. I told you to go to the benefit and come after, I chide.
See, I'm good at giving orders, but unfortunately I don't follow them well.
He takes off his jacket, jerks off his tie, unbuttons the two shirt buttons near his throat, then settles down on my couch, and I'm not sure if I'm the one who presses up into him or he's the one who grabs me close. But we kiss a little, softly but with tongue.
What's going on? He murmurs when he eases back to investigate my features with that keen gaze of his.
I caress the arm he's got curled around me with my fingers, and the muscles of his forearm buzz with strength beneath the sleeve. I gave my 2 weeks' notice today at Edge. A part of me listens to my own voice as if from a tunnel. I'm jobless. I know that Malcolm can help me and has offered his support, but I desperately want to do this on my own, especially now. Already, my relationship with Saint is complicated enough. First, his natural playboy tendencies, my own inexperience in regards to relationships, the social media hanging on our every move, and even, maybe, what happened between us. Working for him, I'd be completely dependent on him, and I'm too scared. I'm more scared of that than of being jobless right this moment. He watches me with clear, observant green eyes as the words sink in.
You gave your 2 weeks' notice. Did you get a callback?
I'd have told you if I had, I assure him. For a moment, he only studies me. He looks at my face unhurriedly, feature by feature, the tensing of his jaw the only sign of frustration.
You gave your 2 weeks' notice without having anything lined up?
He tips my face back and regards me in puzzlement.
Are you coming with me?
Yes, I don't have anything yet. And no, please understand. His eyebrows are still slanted low over his nose. I'm sure he's wondering why I jumped the gun and quit all of a sudden, so I search for the right words, but there's just no other way to say it than plainly. Today, Mr. Clark offered me a bonus to stay, along with a guarantee that my friends would be able to stay as well. His voice is feather soft.
He threatened you?
His thumb caresses my chin where he holds my face securely upward to meet his gaze. A ruthless gleam appears in his eyes, the kind of gleam that makes him exactly who he is, ruthless, unstoppable. I'm afraid to see it right now when all I want is peace. No, it was nice. Curling my hand around the hand holding me, I give it a reassuring squeeze. They were grateful and wanted me to stay. But your father wants me to stay. He wants to assure the Clarks if I stay, he won't can my colleagues.
Malcolm, I wasn't going to let him get to you. There's a darkness roiling in the depths of his gaze. He stands and eases his hands into his pockets. The move is casual, but the energy surrounding Saint all of a sudden is so intimidating I don't know what to say. A long silence stretches. Sin, I can start up freelancing. I point at my laptop, trying to sound positive. I've spent all day scouring my favorite magazines to figure out what it is I like about them, and I made a list. I like those who deal with people, not things or cars, not with the trendiest clothes. What gets me are the pieces that talk about a living thing, our strengths and weaknesses, our wins and its losses. That's what I could have done with Edge, pieces for the modern reader. I look at him. I research how other freelancers have started, usually with capital, and it takes years to build a steady income. I could maybe do it. He walks to my living room window. He stares out for a long moment. His back literally looks like a rock wall.
You can do anything you want to.
I don't want him to feel like I'm throwing his generous offer in his face, but I'm a little panicked, wondering if he does. Unless this is about something else entirely, like his dick father. Well, what do you think about me freelancing for this one blog? I try to turn my computer so he can stare at the blog, but he's not interested. He turns, but he's looking just at me, directly and narrowly.
Why do you think Edge is not hitting its market?
Exhaling, I close my laptop and shift on the couch so I can face him fully.
It's a good question.
Edge is a bit too broad for a magazine of our size. It needs to find a niche and offer things in that context that no one else does. Helen has been onto that for a while, but the owners have always shot her down whenever she's tried to direct a tighter focus. Every single one of my colleagues that remains is very good at what they do. If only Edge were steered more clearly and precisely. He makes no comment, but he's folded one arm and is rubbing his chin thoughtfully. His lips are curled as if my answer pleased him intensely. Frowning, I tell him, what do you think your father's plans for it are?
Absorb it into his other companies, take it apart, keep only what he wants.
He starts walking around, still frowning in thought.
I don't believe for a moment his main interest is Edge.
Something in his stride is too controlled, too deliberate, the look in his eyes too shuttered, cool as fucking ice, as if that very ice is running through his blood. I can almost hear him thinking, the energy around him almost shooting sparks. I know enough about this man to know that he's a genius at self-control, that he's methodical, that he thinks through his every action, that though he has a temper, he rules it, it does not rule him. He doesn't display anything on the outside, but I know that temper is tightly under control right now, and whatever is causing him to turn glacial inside, I'm almost scared on their behalf. As if he reads my mind, he lifts his head and stares at me across the room, his tone chillingly matter-of-fact.
If my father wants Edge, he's going to pay dearly for it. Regardless of whether you're no longer employed at Edge, his pride won't let him back out now.
Back out from what? Buying? Malcolm, it doesn't matter anymore.
It matters to me.
Eyes suddenly growing hot when he looks at me, he comes over and takes me by the chin again.
Do you trust me?
With his free hand, he reaches out for his jacket. The energy shifts in the room as he puts it on. Every cell in my body is aware. Danger, it screams. When Saint frowns down at me and puts on his jacket, I feel like he's suiting up for war. I don't like it. Malcolm, I call when he heads for the door without an answer. His voice is rough but completely uncompromising.
Do you trust me, Rachel?
Entranced by the warlike gleam in his eyes, I nod. He swings open the door.
Then don't look into anything just yet. See how things play out first.
God, this man. Are you leaving for the benefit?
No, I'm visiting my lawyers.
Lawyers? See you at this hour? It's 8 p.m. He shoots me an obvious look, and I roll my eyes. Of course they do. I laugh and groan at his high-handedness.
Trust me.
Malcolm, didn't you hear me? I quit. He closes the door.
War.
Later that night, he texts me, "Free tomorrow?" I answer this because I want him to tell me what's going on. Depends on where we're going or who's asking. What's going on? I've been anxious, waiting to hear something ever since he took off. But he ignores my question and instead answers,
"So it's a no for everyone except me?"
"Someone's cocky," I write back with a laugh.
"Wear something comfortable."
With a delighted sigh, I resign myself to the fact that my mystery man will remain a mystery on this night. Whatever he's up to, I trust he knows what he's doing, though. The next day, he picks me up in Bug 2, and once he tells me we're going to a polo match, I keep asking him to tell me what he is up to. But he just chucks my chin and says, calmly and unhurriedly,
"Next week."
His calm makes me relax about it as he leads me into the grounds. He's wearing skin-tight white riding pants that hug an ass as perfect as a baseball player's, and a navy blue polo that hugs his torso, riding boots up to an inch below his knees. Callan and Saint are playing, so Callan meets us and greets us before Saint leads me to a small round white table with a perfect view of the field, kisses the corner of my mouth, and heads toward the stables. For hours, I sip my mineral water and watch the match, the thundering hooves hitting the ground, shuddering the stands, my hair flying in the wind. All I need is a hat, and I'm absolutely in Pretty Woman. I'm hooked on the game. Saint straddling a black thoroughbred horse, charging across the field, swinging a mallet in his hand, his muscles rippling, sweat glistening on his forehead. His horse has red ankle wraps on all four legs, and between the way it thunders down the field and the way Saint rides powerfully on it, I can't see anything else. But I can hear the whispers of the ladies at the tables behind mine about the guy on the black horse.
Who is he?
That's Malcolm Saint, you dodo.
Shh, his girlfriend's right there.
Carmichael's on the white horse. Do you see him?
I smile privately to myself. Callan and Sin come over when the match is done. The tables behind me fall utterly quiet. They won 10-5, and I kiss Saint on the jaw and congratulate him, and then I congratulate Callan.
"Got a golden swing, this man of yours," he says as he pats Saint's back and they drop into their seats. Then it's, "Hey, ladies," as he greets the girls behind us.
They titter. We stay talking for a while, my curiosity piqued about the polo game more than ever. "Fess up, Saint. Does your horse have four names like you?" I ask.
"He only came with one."
His green eyes twinkle and his lips curl as he sips his water with a hand on the back of my chair.
"He already had a track record when I purchased him at auction."
Then he adds,
"Matrix."
"And Callan's horse?"
"Swear to God, Saint, if you poke fun at my girl again."
"His horse came with a name, too."
Malcolm leans his head to me and laughs when Callan shoots him a deadly look.
"Tinkerbell."
On Sunday, he surprises me by sending Claude to get some Garrett popcorn, my favorite caramel that I love, and I chomp it down while we both sit and read in his comfy library. After I've licked my fingers good and clean and forced a few kernels past his lips, loving how he playfully tries to draw my finger into his mouth along with the popped corn, I curl up to his bare chest as he reads Michael Connelly while I read what stuck to me from his office bookshelf. An Agatha Christie, Destination Unknown. I keep getting up to change my book for a few other Agatha Christie offerings, even as Saint flips his pages. Settling back down with a collection of Miss Marple stories, I peer into his book and make him share the page with me so I can skim through what he's reading. Why does he suspect his brother's death wasn't a suicide?
"Read it," he tweaks my nose and tells me, "get back to yours."
"I like yours better."
"No, you like distracting me better."
"That too." We laugh, and I then determine to ignore him, so I pull up my book and shift on the long couch to set my feet on his lap. He takes one foot in his hand and holds his book with the other, reading for another half hour. Before long, he's leaning over to peer at my book.
"Where are you?"
he asks, his voice gruff from not speaking for a while as he skims the page.
"Ah,"
I slap his shoulder with the book. Don't spoil it for me. What do you mean, ah? Is he the bad guy? Tell me. He chuckles low, then pries my book away, sets it aside, and we kiss, slow and easy. And I end up lying back as my body grows soft as cotton, him hard and strong above me, and we take a reading break to make love. Later, he orders home delivery for us and we read some more while we wait. I study the look on his face as he turns the pages of his book. So intellectual today. Once again, as I have over the entire weekend, I try to wheedle out what he talked to his lawyers about, only for him to simply say, next week, without even lifting his eyes from his book. I sigh and reluctantly let it go, cuddling against him, Saint automatically raising his arm around me as I do. Holy crap. It's scary how much I like it here. With these arms, who needs red slippers to come home? I arrive, exhausted and satisfied, plus a million, at work at 9 on the dot on Monday. Before I enter the elevator, a man with the most intimidating vibe, the harshest look on his face, and the biggest group of minions around him, steps out. I start when he looks at me. Noel Saint. Like he crawled out from the internet, and the endless harsh photos of him there ended up right here, right in this building. Shock paralyzes me for a moment. Tall and dark-haired, he's almost as beautiful as Malcolm. But there is nothing even remotely playful about this man. Where Malcolm's presence buzzes with energy, Noel Saint feels like a bomb about to explode right now when he sets his eyes, completely unlike Malcolm's, on me. You, he says, in the most contemptuous tone I've ever heard. He steps over to me, and out of self-preservation, I step around as one of the young production interns boards the elevator. Are you coming? She asks, holding the door open like she's offering me a lifeline. I hurry inside, and Noel Saint turns to stare at me, and I stare back at him unflinchingly. Inside me, a ball of pure loathing starts burning in my belly, and I shoot him a look more hateful than the one he is sending my way, more hateful than I've ever given anyone in my life. And he says, with a sneer, he won't win, before the doors roll shut. A morgue-like silence settles in the elevator.
Whoa, who was that? The intern asks, blue eyes wide in concern.
I look at her, wishing I could remember her name so this would be less awkward.
My boyfriend's father. Oh, wow.
She pats my shoulder regretfully, and I exhale shakily. Was he here visiting the Clarks? He didn't look too pleased. Did he find out I'm not on board with his asshole blackmail plan? He seemed so beyond mad, I can't believe anyone would get this riled up about anything, much less a measly employee leaving her job. I'm still feeling a ton of dread sitting like a brick in my stomach as I step out cautiously on my floor and look for any signs of gloom and doom. And I'm surprised that there's not. In fact, everything is normal, on Red Bull. Almost too much noise, too many laughs. I head to my desk.
Rachel, Helen wants to see you immediately.
And then report back to me, Valentine instructs with a very wide smile when he spots me. I walk to Helen's office, glad to see Valentine looking happy, wondering if maybe he found a new job. Helen waves me in, and I immediately start. I am very firm on my decision, Helen.
Are you really? Because the entire office is thrilled.
When I only stand there in growing confusion, she adds, as you know, Noel Saint has offered for Edge. She claps her hands together, clearly delighted.
But your boyfriend didn't seem to like that.
I inhale painfully. I know.
In any case, there's a bidding war going on.
She nods.
Noel Saint versus M4.
She eyes me. Malcolm's taking on his father for Edge. I'm pretty sure the world just stopped turning.
Did you hear?
Heart fucking attack.
He's upping the ante.
Half in anticipation, half in dread, I ask, who's winning? I don't know, but I'm rooting for your boy. She finishes that with a mile-wide smile. You know that love letter you wrote to him? She asks as I head to the door in a complete state of shock and confusion. She winks. This might just be Saint's reply. Me, a woman of words. Him, a man of action. Shit, I cannot let him buy Edge. Not because he'd be my boss, that's not even an issue anymore. But because I won't let him throw his money away into something he's never believed in. I won't let him be reckless because of me. Edge isn't worth what they're offering for it, I tell Helen. You know that. They're not paying for Edge now. They've got a long-standing rivalry, and they're going to do this to the end. Your boyfriend's father wants Edge with you in it. Your boyfriend is not letting him take you on. But I quit, Helen. If Saint wins, you'll come back, she says assuredly. When I step out of the office, nobody is working at all. They're all leaning in groups around their cubicles, and when I come out, they hoot. Hey, we're Team Malcolm, Valentine calls. Team Malcolm, Sandy says. Team Malcolm, the chants begin around the office. Guys, I start, groaning. Fuck, I laugh nervously and go back to my seat and text him. Saint, Edge is in an uproar.
We'll talk later.
What? Malcolm Kyle Preston Logan Saint, I reply.
Later.
Please tell me you know what you're doing.
You shouldn't even have to ask.
God, I love you, I want to text. You're unpredictable and you drive me crazy and I love you. But the next time I say it, it will be looking into his green eyes, and that's that. I sigh at that and then sit at my computer, look up Noel Saint's image, and give him the finger. Take that from us at Edge, asshole. He promised to come over after work. I shut the door, breathe, and look at all my things. Almost everything I love is within these walls. I'm safe, right? The water feels a little rocky, but it's not going to turn my boat. I grab my laptop and head to my room. It's my baby. It's the one thing I'd take in the event of a fire. It's who I talk to, my laptop. And it's who talks to me. It's all I need to work, really. It can feed me, feed my mother, as long as I have the will. I can leave Edge, and while I still have my laptop, there's still hope for me. But Saint is out for blood, and it's all because of me. I search for this bidding war online as I wait for him. His social media is quiet, but I see a couple of articles posted yesterday and today that catch my eye. M4 stock dropped more than 5% after hours. Shareholders are deciding to sell after Saint's decision to invest in Tahoe Roth's oil well. Not the only bad business decision he's made in the past quarter. Rumors about entering a bidding war for Edge have sent the stock plummeting even further. Sources say M4 Chief Executive Officer Malcolm Saint's head is just not in the right place after his involvement with columnist Rachel Livingston, who exposed the universally loved magnate only recently in an article for a local magazine. I click the links and stare at the pictures. We're out having dinner together in one. In another, he's getting into his car. In another, he's standing in a sea of men looking detached and somehow alone, thoughtful. I swear, in all the articles about him online, few of them tell you how Saint is actually generous. How come no one writes about that, or writes about the bad side of his fame? What it might be like for a person so exposed to the world, someone continually judged, even by his girlfriend. Someone who can't help but see skewed mirrors of himself thrust up by the media. Does he see himself as the media sees him? Or what other people see? The Malcolm Saint you hear about in the news is reckless and intense. He doesn't save a close friend's business. The Saint in the media wouldn't buy a mural to support a cause that I believed in. He wouldn't come to my campout. The Saint in the media wouldn't offer me a job regardless of what happened between us, just to keep me away from someone he knows could do me harm. The Saint in the media is a powerful legend. but my boyfriend is a mysterious, thrilling man who I want to peel open and then kiss all the way inside to whatever wounds made him. I think of his father, how frustrated Saint has been trying to get me out of Edge and into M4. Suddenly I understand his position. Would I want my boyfriend in harm's way? No. Just knowing M4 is taking a hit because of some allegedly bad business calls, partly because of me, I want to comfort Saint. I want to take my measly $1,000 savings and go buy the 3 shares in M4 I could afford, just to show him I believe in him. I just want to hear him reassure me that he won't throw his hard-earned money on a lost cause, on revenge on his father, on revenge for me, on saving all my colleagues. He's a man who's been asked for many things by people who want to use him. I want him to know all I want is his support and his love. He doesn't have to save everybody to prove himself to me. He doesn't have to prove anything to his dad anymore. He is Malcolm Kyle Preston Logan Saint. Intense, relentless, and ambitious, 10 times more powerful than any other man in Chicago. Capable of building 1,000 edges from scratch. And his father can go straight to hell. When Malcolm arrives at my apartment, late, I charge over to him, take his hand while Gina keeps watching TV, and lead him to my room. I saw him today. Noel, I say, knowing by instinct he'll want every detail of our encounter. When his green eyes flash protectively, his eyebrows slant over his eyes and he opens his mouth, I lift my fingers and press them to his lips. He stepped off the elevator before I could go in. He said, "You won't win," and then I rode upstairs. That was all. From what I've seen of him, he's big on insults, but that's all the game he's got. Still frowning, he takes my wrist and lowers my hand. His voice is low and deadly.
"He went to Edge."
I nod and lace my fingers through his, somehow wanting to calm him. Probably meeting with the Clarks.
"Funny,"
he says with perfectly moderated anger.
"Because the Clarks are kissing my feet right now for starting the price war."
"But they need that second buyer for the price to rise, don't they?" I say. He shrugs off his jacket and walks over to the corner chair, tossing it over the armrest before he unknots and pulls off his tie.
"Even without any assurance of you staying, my father's ego won't stand backing down to me. Like he said, he doesn't want me to win."
His lips curl as if he's savoring the fight. He shoves the tie into his jacket pocket and stands there, in that white men's shirt, looking at me as if making sure that I'm all right. And my heart is quivering when I add, "You're bidding on Edge."
"M4 is."
"M4 is you, Saint. You're bidding on Edge. Why?"
"I'm not bidding on Edge. I'm bidding on you."
My entire body resonates with shock and emotion at his words, the violently tender expression on his face. I drop my gaze. "It hurts to think that you're doing this for me."
"Don't say that. You have no idea what you've done for me."
He holds my face in one hand as the other gently cups the back of my neck. His eyes are like daggers of heat and truth, ruthlessness and loyalty, as he peers down at me, his lashes halfway over his eyes.
"Do you know what I'd do for you?"
A huskiness enters his voice as he circles my chin with his thumb.
"You're the only heaven I will ever know, Rachel."
He looks into my eyes.
"And if you were a hell, I'd sin my entire life just to stay with you."
His eyes are intense one second, and the next they're smiling down at me as he scans my face and adds,
"I would kill for this one ear."
He takes it between his thumb and forefinger and tugs it playfully. And when I finally smile, his expression becomes sober again, his voice low and smooth as steel.
"My father won't touch you, Rachel. He won't play with you, threaten you, so much as breathe on you."
"Saint," I protest, "I don't want him to touch you." As if that's inconsequential, he kicks his shoes off, settles down on my bed in his shirt and slacks, and opens his arms. I go there. And he asks very plainly,
"Do you want me to buy you Edge?"
What? Oh my God, Saint did not just ask me this. But he did. He did.
You said...
I clear my throat, shaking the daze off.
You once said you didn't see your money going there. You don't believe in Edge.
But I believe in you. He watches me. I'm not bidding on it for myself. I'm either giving you your magazine back or draining the demon who spawned me of every last drop for daring to attempt to toy with you.
A ruthless gleam appears in his eyes, his voice dropping.
If you want it, I won't back down until I break him, and Edge is yours. Yours to do what you want with. Your platform.
He studies me in both silence and appreciation, his eyes missing no detail.
Is Edge what you want?
I'm struggling to control my emotions, stumped by his continued generosity to me. I love Edge, I admit. But I want to be somewhere with potential and that doesn't remind me of what I almost gave up for it. Somewhere with freedom.
I'd love for my friends to have jobs, of course. Have a way to earn more, work more.
Maybe I want something more.
He looks at me, both patient and expectant, as if he's still waiting for more.
Malcolm, back down, I finish.
Do you or don't you want Edge? Tell me.
He tilts my face up so those keen eyes absorb every inch of my expression. No, I hear myself say, painfully realizing this is true. I don't. I hadn't realized until now how much I want a fresh start. Edge is in my past now. I want the best for my friends, but maybe we each have to find our own way.
I'll make sure your friends don't lack for opportunities.
You will? My eyes widen and I grip his shoulders. Then back down.
Not yet.
He leans back and crosses his arms behind his head.
We still have a way to go.
How high are you raising the price? What if Satan backs down and leaves you as the purchaser?
He won't back down. He's been waiting to go head to head for years. He wants to show me who has the deepest pocket, and after I'm done with him, it will undoubtedly continue to be mine.
God, his smirks are killing me. I laugh, then groan. Malcolm, you're too bloodthirsty. Back down now.
Once your 2 weeks are up, when he can't touch you, he calmly assures.
Malcolm, I groan. He laughs and pulls me close, staring into my eyes.
Don't you trust me? Take that leap, Rachel.
I sound a little scared when I ask, are you going to catch me?
It wouldn't be a leap if you knew that for sure. It'd be a step. In steps, you go by facts. You leap on faith.
In me, I read in his gaze, and in you. I nod, breathless under his touch, the look of complete ruthlessness and determination I see. Okay, but back down, please.
Rachel, I will.
Promise me. He laughs tenderly over my concern, but then he falls sober, extremely so.
You want me to promise?
He asks softly. I remember he doesn't make promises, so I bite my tongue and say nothing. Then he leans forward, slowly, achingly slow.
I promise you,
he suddenly rasps out with a firm nod.
I do. I promise you.
He seizes my face to look at me and kisses the corner of my lips.
The moment you've stepped out of Edge for the last time, you come to me. Whatever I'm doing, you come to me. I want you to always come to me.
I'm still reeling as I nod, and then I just lie there in his arms. Malcolm mentally planning his strategy, and me learning to trust. The Final Leap. My last day at Edge, I cry. My friends cry, and Helen, she sucks it up. Valentine brings a pie and tells me, I'm still rooting for Malcolm.
Don't, Val, I whisper. What's happening shouldn't be happening. I'm not staying. Edge and I are done. Wouldn't you like to start new?
I glance at Sandy,
who's also at my cubicle eating pie. Maybe start up something like Bluekin, edgier, where we can all maybe own shares of our startup, motivating us to really make a killing for it? Valentine looks around, then says,
Dude, I can't forgo my salary for months while we try to get the online thing going.
I know, but...
And Sandy barely makes rent. She can't afford to freelance while also working on our own website, just hoping it's a success.
Let's at least think about it. Maybe talk about it a little more. If you're let go by, well, if Noel Saint lets you go or proves impossible to work for, please don't just take shit from him. Move onward to something better. Even if it doesn't seem like that at first. It's scary, I know. Hell, I'm still scared, but I also know I want something more.
You? Not playing it safe? I'm stunned, frankly.
Val nods admiringly. I can't play it safe now. I'm taking a leap. And if I find something good, I'd love you guys with me. I can't have this guilt of you guys losing your jobs because I left.
Hey, it's not you who'd can us. It's that asshole.
Still.
Rachel,
get out of here.
Go and get a life. A different one. One where you can look back and all this,
he spreads his arms to encompass the newsroom,
was just a part of it. A big part, but only one part.
I really had hoped Valentine would consider us maybe striking out together, giving ourselves a platform for our stories. I really wish they weren't so understanding and kind, and so hard to leave.
I really wish Helen had been an asshole all the time, so I could walk away with my box of things without tears in my eyes.
But of course, that's not the case. It never really is in real life. So I do sniffle a lot and give out more hugs than I've given out in a while, and then I walk out of Edge and dump my box of things outside, keeping only the portrait of my mother I used to have on my desk and a little pen that I got at a motivational conference that says, Go for it. And so I am. Without a call, without a text, without any kind of forewarning, I head to M4. Saint asked me to come to him, but the truth is, I need to. I just need to look at him and be inspired by all that strength of his, and maybe I just need to hear him tell me everything will be all right. I'm leaving the old me behind at Edge. I'm leaving all my mistakes. I'm leaving the scared girl behind. This is me taking the leap. And I need to know that he won't let his father goad him any farther, that he won't be acquiring Edge, because Malcolm Saint has done enough for me. I'd let him do anything else now, I realize, because I trust him. He can love me, protect me, help me, but not go to war over me. At reception, the ladies are surprised to see me, but I can tell they've seen the social media. They know I'm the girlfriend now. Miss Livingston, what a surprise, one says. I'm sure Mr. Saint will be pleased, if you'll let me ring you up. I thank her and then head up in the elevator.
Breathe, Rachel.
Catherine is already on her feet when I get off, also a bit flustered by the surprise visit. He's with some of his board, if you'll just take a seat for a moment. I smile weakly and grip the M in my fist, tugging it and rubbing it against the R. As I wait, I listen to his four assistants take calls and type on their keyboards. I smooth my skirt down my thighs when the door to his office opens and a pack of businessmen emerge. They're all screaming confidence and power. Good day, Mr. Stevens, Mr. Thompson, Catherine calls to the businessmen as they head to the elevators. And then I hear his voice from within the room. It's so deep, familiar. I feel it like a low hum vibrating in the deepest part of my body.
He should have known if he wanted to play hardball, I'd be game. I'd strike a home run before he even realized he made a mistake throwing a ball my way, he says decidedly to the man with him.
Then he spots me and lifts his eyebrows, and the ruthless smile he's wearing, the one directed at the person he means to crush, starts to fade when he sees me sitting here, my eyes maybe a little red as I struggle not to show how crestfallen I feel.
"We'll settle this once and for all tomorrow at 2, he tells the businessman in a lower voice.
The man nods and leaves. My gaze is caught. My heart is frozen. As Saint slowly stalks forward, directly toward me. He takes me gently by the arm as I stand and leads me to his office. And I know by his gentle but firm grip that he knows I'm not okay. Inside his office, he pulls me into his arms, tells me,
"Breathe."
I grip his tie and nod.
"You came to me."
He groans then in my ear, as if that thought undoes him. "Always," I whisper, still gripping his tie. "Mr. Saint," his intercom beeps, "your 1 o'clock just arrived?" I watch him walk with that confident stride of his to his desk as I try to hold myself together. With the press of a finger, he tells her,
"Reschedule. I'm going to need an hour."
I shake my head. "Don't, really. I'm all right. I just came to let you know I'm out." I leapt. I spread my arms out and turn to stare out his window, not sure how I feel about my next words. Scared? Hopeful? I'm a free agent.
"Then turn around and look at me, Rachel," he whispers.
Hearing the raw emotion in his voice, I turn. Holding my gaze with fierce intensity, he lifts the phone on his desk and dials a number.
"We back down," he says,
and then he hangs up, very slowly. Click. I didn't mean to interrupt, I admit. I just wanted to.
"Know that I kept my promise,"
he finishes. "Yes, but no. I wanted to see you, Saint. I always want to see you when I'm happiest or saddest, or I just always want to see you." I watch a dozen emotions skid through his eyes.
"I'm here for you, Rachel."
"I know," I say. And for the first time, I believe it, 100%. Maybe no man has ever been there for me before. No father, brother, boyfriend. And now, I believe Malcolm Saint is here for me because he wants to be. My chest hurts with love. "So you just backed out?"
"That's right," he shrugs dismissively. "There's a binding agreement running through the auction, legally binding the winner to go through with the purchase. The bragging rights will cost him a fortune."
My body's shaking. I didn't realize in my haste to come here that when I dumped my old stuff outside of Edge, I also dumped my sweater. Really, Livingston? The air conditioning is blasting as high as these top business corporations always keep it. I'm shivering so much, the last part of what I say is through clenched teeth. "I know you said I could work at M4, but..."
"But you're right. It's not ideal for us," he quietly admits,
eyes probing me in silence.
"I won't be holding you back, Rachel, tying you down where you're not happy."
My teeth chatter. "You know my reasons are because I want us more. I'm going to start freelancing." I stop talking when he crosses his office to a familiar, pristine, white, smooth space on the wall. With a tap, he opens the hidden closet and takes out a jacket.
"Here."
"I don't..." He puts it over my shoulders, and the brush of his fingers on the back of my neck triggers a tremor down my spine. "Saint, don't," I say. I'm afraid that his touch is going to make me crumble from the inside out. His eyes look liquid on me as he touches the R and the M necklace resting at the base of my throat.
"What happened to Malcolm?" he teases me.
I can see he's trying to make me happy, and it makes me love him all the more. "Malcolm," I then say with a smile. His eyes go liquid with heated tenderness as he takes my hand.
"Come with me now."
"I'm sorry you had to butt heads with your father for me," I tell him as we board the elevator. We stop one floor down, and Saint tells the pair of businessmen about to board,
Take the next one.
And they instantly retreat. He looks at me once we're alone again.
You grew up without a father. In your mind, he would have cared for you, appreciated you. He would have talked to you. I had a father. But every time I threw a ball, he threw it farther just to show me how short my range was. Every time I built something, he smashed it in the simplest way he could, to show me all the flaws in my plans. Not all fathers lift you up. Some stick their foot out to trip you.
He speaks without inflection, as if it's only a fact of life.
In the beginning, you try harder just to show him that you can. Then you do it to prove to yourself that you can. Until there comes a day when you simply do things because you can. I'm not doing this for my father. I wasn't backing Edge.
He opens up a room on the 11th floor.
I was backing you, Rachel.
I glance around at a dozen computers, high-tech equipment, the offices in the corners. It looks like a newsroom.
This is where Interface started, before we went corporate, when it was just an idea, the start.
He signals around, and as I take in the impressive room, I feel him eyeing me with a gaze that is both achingly gentle and silently contemplative.
So, you see, it's standing here, just waiting for another great idea, another great start.
As I look at all of the high-tech computers and chrome desks, I have a deja vu moment of the time he took me to the Interface building and kissed the fuck out of me.
You can take this floor. Yours, he emphasizes. I'll fund your start. You can build your own team, your board. You'll make the choices. And you'll give yourself the platform you need to write whatever it is you want to write.
He looks at me with a twinkle in his eye and hope, as if he wants to see me smile, as if he's hoping this will be it.
You'd have more responsibilities than writing, true. But you're smart. You can bring in your team. If you get stuck, I'm sure you'll think of someone who can help you. You can build your own Blueken. Even better.
His stare is so admiring and respectful and loving, I can't breathe. Oh, God. Epic love. This is it? Want it or not? Do you take the leap? Do you take it? Saint did. He believes I can do something more than what I do. He believes he can give me freedom and help me build a platform to see me soar. My eyes water a little, and I duck my head and try to wipe a tear. He reaches for me. He puts one hand on my face, forcing my gaze to stay on him. I feel a pull of heat in my belly.
Let me give you this.
His eyes are completely mine, but at the same time, they swallow me. I've never felt his energy so powerfully wrapped around mine. I've never seen such pure, undiluted, raw emotion in his eyes. My chest hurts.
You don't know how much I admire you, Rachel.
His eyes glow with the force of his emotions.
How you care for others? For me. I appreciated your words before, but this.
He takes something out of his pocket, and I hold my breath when I recognize the magazine cover for the article I wrote.
This was very brave, Rachel, putting yourself out there like that for me. This was a leap on its own. You're right.
He lifts it up for me to see, then sets it aside on a nearby desk and starts coming forward.
It was our story, but not our entire story. It was only the beginning.
I cry freely now. I love you, Malcolm.
Do you really?
Yes, really. He frames my jaw in wide, warm hands, tilting me to his line of sight as he dries my face.
The first time I heard it, I couldn't think of anything else. Even when all the shit came down, I'd think of those three words. I've loved you for a while, Rachel. All the fortune I've amassed, and I'd never wanted to lay it out there for someone the way I want to lay it out there for you.
You wanted your world to go still. Stand still with me. I may be thirsty, ambitious. I'll charge out there, but this, what we have, let's stand still here, you and me.
My throat closes when I remember what I told him before. I've never been held like this by anyone else. I've never had a man's arms around me in comfort, making me feel so utterly safe. I never imagined that I could stand in the middle of the storm that is Malcolm Kyle Preston Logan Saint and truly feel like my world is finally becoming still. His smile. His damn smile. I forget its effect on me. My stomach is in a wild swirl. Malcolm, breathlessly I stare. You'd do this for me?
I'd do more.
A silence full of meaning falls between us. I want to say so many things, but I can't find my precious words. His actions won over this time, for real.
I love you, Malcolm. And I love you, Rachel, very much.
My throat closes. Hold me for a hot second. He already is holding me as he whispers,
I'll hold you for 4.
Then in my ear he adds gruffly,
go home and think about this.
Yes. I cut him off, and this time it's me who grabs him by the collar and kisses the fuck out of him.
I've got to get back to work. Let me take you to dinner?
He asks me. I've used up all my nose with you, I say quietly, kissing him as I speak. He kisses me as he speaks, too, voice husky with male pride.
So it's another yes.
Definitely.
Not good enough, Rachel. Say it.
I laugh. Yes, greedy man. You freaking woman wizard. Yes, yes, yes.
That evening, I call my ex-coworkers and tell them if they're leaving Edge, I want them with me. I'm having lunch with a few of them next week, including Valentine and Sandy. Then I talk to Gina, and we call Wynn.
Rachel, is all Wynn can say. I'm
speechless, I know. This dude leaves me speechless all the fucking time now, Gina jumps in to say. I sit here speechless too, or rather wordless, feeling warm and fuzzier than my socks. They're both getting hung up on the fact that he's supporting me and my dreams. I'm hung up on the fact that, despite his upbringing, loving his variety in women and business ventures, and the fact that it seemed fairly impossible to do, I'm very, very sure that Saint loves me. When Malcolm arrives, I'm wearing a little black dress and ballet flats, my hair down and hardly any lipstick. The door of his Pagani Huayra flies open, and he holds my hand as I slip inside, and soon we're speeding off. Hey, I ask, how was your day?
Good, now.
He reaches out to give me a brief but delish corner kiss, and I reach out to take his hand after he changes gears, leaving it there. We go to a private room at a 5-star restaurant called Tableau. Behind a set of velvet curtains, we're alone. Just Sin and I, talking about today. I guess I'm the one talking the most, but he's listening to me like he always does with a charmed amusement that spears into my heart and melts me. I called my ex-coworkers. I told them if they're leaving Edge, I want them with me.
Your mother?
I haven't told her yet.
You realize she can hand-paint your covers if you wanted her to?
Yes, and I do want her to. He sits across the table from me, and I just want to lean over and eat him up with kisses. I feel cherished, protected, safe. I'm so excited. I laugh lightly while his boldly handsome face smiles warmly across the table. I love when his full lips soften with humor, and his part smile, part smirk goes all the way to light up his eyes. So, your father has officially bought Edge? He nods. You knew he wouldn't back down to you.
He's as proud as me. He told you he'd win, didn't he?
He leans back and eyes me quietly.
He was obsessed with my mother. They were perfectly in love until I arrived. He couldn't stand that his perfect wife gave him an imperfect son. He resented that she became protective of me. She loved me more than him. He didn't take it well.
I never knew. I look at him.
Now I know.
What?
What he felt. That I'd do anything for you. Fuck over anyone to protect you. Do anything to keep you. Crush the world for you. My mother's gone, but he still wants to prove he's better than me. Prove to her how wrong she was to choose me over him. She asked for a divorce, but he never let her go.
It would have been hard for a mother like yours not to love you hard, especially if you were stuck with your dad.
I fared well, he smirks.
You did, I say lovingly. I think he notices the longing inside me.
Come over here.
He reaches out for my hand over the table and tugs me around with the lazy confidence of a guy who knows, with certainty, he's getting laid tonight.
I like this smile, he says as I carefully sit on his lap.
I laugh lightly.
And this laugh.
The lights are low. They shine on Malcolm as he moves the little M and R necklaces at the bottom of my throat and sets a kiss on my pulse point. Are we to be each other's desserts? I ask him. God, I sound so hopeful I laugh after. The lively twinkle in his eye makes me think that he's planning something wicked.
You're definitely mine.
He dips his index finger into his wine. What are you up to, Sin? I chide, and before I can say more, he's dipping his finger into my mouth. Leaning over, he follows his finger with his kiss. I lick his finger. You've liked doing this since the wine tasting.
You have no idea.
He shifts me on his lap and looks at me lazily through half-closed lids. He tugs my dress upward to my hips and slips his hand into the warmth between my inner thighs. My body jolts pleasurably at the touch of his fingers stroking me softly. I'm nervous someone will come in, but he's looking at me with such heated mischief I can't resist him. I put my lips on his neck, my fingertips roaming the flat planes of his chest. The muscles harden under my fingers. My mouth is trailing up to his, and I hear his groan when my fingers start going down his chest, down his abs, to spread my hand over as much of his hard-on as I can. And then Malcolm's hand is easing off my ballet flats, and they fall with a clatter. He pulls one of my legs until I'm straddling him. He kisses the tip of my nose, then my eyes, and his mouth takes mine again in another slow, drugging kiss. I inhale as he stops to look down on me. I hold my breath, exhaling as he reaches out one hand to cup my face. And then he kisses the corner of my lips. Oh God, don't. I won't last if you do that.
Why?
I inhale sharply, then hold my breath as he slides his lips across mine into the other corner of my mouth. My lungs strain as I hold my breath, savoring the ghost kiss until he eases back. Our eyes connect. My lips tingle from his kiss. I exhale shakily, reaching out to cup his jaw. And I do exactly what he did. I brush my lips to the corner of his mouth. I hear him inhale too, deep and hard. Exhale when I ease back. Green eyes shimmer with desire and need, and things he hasn't said to me, but maybe I don't need him to. I don't need him to at all. I lean forward and press my lips to the other edge of his mouth, but he cheats. He cups the back of my head to hold me still and turns a fraction of an inch so he can capture my kiss with his lips. I try to edge back, very aware that the waiter will soon be returning and I need to go back to my seat. Did you mess up my lipstick?
What lipstick?
I laugh, and Saint chuckles and holds my hand over the table as I return to my seat.
I like this laugh, he says, his thumb stroking over the back of mine. I like this laugh very much.
He wants me to spend the weekend with him, so we stop by my place. We'll be hitting the toy and doing lunch somewhere he wants to take me to by the lake.
Gina is panicking when she sees me come home one minute and come out to the living room the next.
You have a bag. A big bag? She asks, wide-eyed as she stares at the bag slung over my shoulder.
It's only one comfortable pair of shoes, Gina, for the gym in his building. One for going out and one for the office. And my toothbrush, and just a few more things. I'm not moving in. I'm simply being practical. He asked me to spend the weekend.
Rachel, she says.
It's only the weekend, Gina. Maybe one or two nights a week. I'll find a good balance, I promise.
Dude, you're making me want to get a dog. Someone who gives a shit about when I get home.
I do, I cry, hugging her as my heart squishes a little bit. How could I not have thought of this? I've been so happy and I didn't think twice about saying yes right now.
I love you, G.
She hugs me back in mopey silence, but then slaps my bum.
He's out there?
Yes.
You know, she pauses, her expression apologetic. He's no Paul, Rach.
I know, Gina.
We stare at each other. We've never really been separated in a way that feels so real for years.
Okay. I'll see you Monday, I finally tell her, heading to the door as she drops back to the couch and glares at the TV.
Monday is Monday, Rachel, not Tuesday or Thursday, she threatens.
I know what Monday is.
I groan and laugh as I hold the doorknob in my hands, still somehow waiting for a bigger reassurance.
Don't look sad on my behalf. I'm having an orgy while you're away.
Shit is really going to go down here now that the responsible one is gone, she promises. But all too soon, she drops the big bad girl act and grows serious, her expression softening.
Rach, I'm so happy for you. I love how happy he makes you. I want you to know I'm on board with this 100%.
My best friend. Unlike Wynne, not a lot of people like Gina. Not a lot of people get her. But I love her all the same. I come back, give her another kiss on the cheek, and leave quietly.
Monday, I say.
Have enough sex for the both of us, she calls. I come out into the evening breeze, swinging the bag with my things behind my shoulder. And there he is, leaning against his car, arms crossed, wearing this most perfect smile. I start forward, and I'm truly breathless. I walk up to him, and he meets me halfway. His smile, when he sees me, is the kind that stops traffic. And now it stops my heart. This man renders women stupid, and I'm officially the most affected because I've been seeing a lot of his smiles today. And I've been smiling a lot, too. I'm smiling now, a smile that receives a kiss from his smiling mouth as he helps me into his car. The elevator doors close behind us seconds after we reach his penthouse. The city lights twinkle outside, and it looks so perfectly peaceful and happy as he lifts me in his arms. Locking my legs around his hips, I grab his shirt collar and let my lips wander up his jaw in search of his.
I'm hungry, I breathe.
Open your mouth then, he says. He wets my lips with his tongue for a moment before drawing back to look at me with fierce eyes.
That what you want?
I nod and wrap my arms around his neck. He rubs his nose into my hair and inhales deeply, then drags his nose down mine and starts kissing me. He crushes me between the wall and him and reaches to slide his hands under my dress. I feel his fingers caressing my flesh up to my bra, and I hear him unhook it. I'm shaking as he frees me, and then he takes my dress in one hand and pulls it over my head in one smooth yank. I fist his t-shirt in my hand and tug, and he helps me, grabbing it in one fist and pulling it over his head. His hair ends up even more mussed than usual, and he looks so sexy that my airway constricts and I can hardly talk as I rub his smooth skin with my fingertips.
Malcolm.
I dive to lick a beautiful brown nipple while rubbing the other one. I cling as he lifts me up in his arms and carries me to the bedroom, our mouths never unlatching. He doesn't carry me elegantly like Rhett Butler in Gone with the Wind, because I'm not as hard to get as Scarlet. But he carries me with his hands on my ass and my legs around his hips, his delicious hard bulge pressing to the apex between my thighs as his mouth works on mine. My body trembles with his nearness, and my mind races at the mere thought of us heading straight toward our happily ever after. Fuck me fast. He sets me down on the bed, and I stretch my arms over my head, moving sensually to tempt him. Fast, then slow.
Shh, my bed, my rules. Strip the shoes and those tiny panties.
He unbuckles his belt, and at the sight of his sculptured body, I'm dying. He is perfection. He looks impenetrable in a business suit as if nothing can touch him, but naked? He's a god, all tanned, toned chest muscles, dark hair rumpled from my hands, those green eyes, liquid. He's everything I never knew I wanted and more. My mouth waters as I edge back in bed and watch him unbuckle. He watches me, too, and I get a sense of both weakness and power as I start to take off my panties in slow, teasing movements of my legs, loving the way he watches me kick them in the air. He looks at me with a smile that slowly turns wolfish. Something about me giving him everything, my every wall shattered, seems to make him more possessive. Before I know it, he's spread my thighs apart and is licking between my legs, his big, beautiful muscles bulging between my parted thighs. Reveling, I pump my hips up to his mouth, every flash of his tongue knotting me up. I clench my teeth as I try to hold back my orgasm for a little longer. I'm about to combust when he raises his head and looks at me, heavy-lidded.
I love you, Rachel.
The hard emotion on his face as he looks down at me is so powerful, I shudder to my core. He strokes his hand up my side so that he can touch his thumb to the corner of my mouth.
I love you like nothing else in my life.
I just melt when you say it. He laughs softly, and I lie here and smile, feeling like goo. His mouth covers mine, his kiss gentle and loving as he spreads over me. He fills my mouth with his tongue, and my body jerks from the pleasure, watching him above me. I've never seen a guy look at me that way before, his eyes hot and proprietary and meltingly hungry. He slides one hand down my abdomen, circling my belly button, then caressing my sex lips with his fingers, until finally sticking his middle finger inside me. Malcolm, I moan, rocking my hips and thrashing. He takes my mouth, and I kiss him.
No condom, he murmurs, looking at me.
No condom. Just him and me. It involves a high level of trust, this thing we're about to do. And neither of us hesitates as our lips fuse again. I grab him to me, curl my legs, and undulate welcomingly as he drives inside me. He groans as I moan, and before I can climax instantly from the feel of him, he pulls out. And I'm there, shivering, suspended in the pinnacle of both physical and emotional pleasure. Gasping for air, I look at him, panting, burning, and his chest is heaving as he holds himself up on his arms above me. He likes prolonging. I close my eyes and savor the way he does it. His lips once again tug on my nipples, then trail along my abdomen, up my neck. He smells me, tastes me, relishes me, experiences me. I grab his hair, undulating beneath his hot, hard body, savoring him back. He's my obsession and my addiction, the only place I feel both safe and exhilarated. Sin, I beg. He pulls free from my kiss and growls,
I am obsessed with you.
Then he grabs my hips and fills me, whispering,
I adore you.
Filling me completely, watching me with those smoldering green eyes I can feel in every part of me, building up a new orgasm, cupping my breasts in his hands and bending to lick and lave both tips. I thrash beneath him, unsure if I can survive so much of him. So much pleasure, such total consuming pleasure. But I do, and he goes deeper in me. I sigh in relief every time he thrusts back in. Sigh his name pleadingly, He takes my mouth with his kiss ravenous.
I am crazy about you,
he rasps, moving in me so deep I can feel him in my heart. His face moves to my ear.
Let me own you, Rachel, and I'll let you own me right back. You're my lady now.
He kisses my forehead, my nose, and my lips.
Don't close your eyes. Look at me,
he says, and when I lift my lashes, his eyes are luminous in his face, and he's the hottest, sexiest thing I've ever seen, watching me as he fucks me as if transfixed. He rams his hand into my hair and makes a hard fist as he moves his body over mine, pinning me down for leverage as he watches me come for him. I give myself over. Sin. Saint. Malcolm inside me. Malcolm watching me with his green eyes. Malcolm clenching his jaw as he makes love to me. Malcolm, who has my heart.
We spend Saturday on the toy. He orders food from a delicious French restaurant before we sail, and then the crew cleans up as we head upstairs. We're in the top-level sitting area now as the yacht moves through the water, sated from swimming, making out in the water, doing it in the cabin shower, and then in the bed. Relaxed from all the sex, Malcolm works for a while on a couch, and I lounge nearby with my feet on his lap and one of his hands stroking them absently as I surf my phone a little bit. I'm steering away from anything that could be a downer. So, no Saint social media digging shit for me. No Saint social media about his father. I hear him take a call and am happy to overhear that M4's stock had a huge rally after the news broke that Edge went to Noel Saints Corporation. And now, I can't stop dreaming of my new career, my new office space, my new life. I'm thinking of all the things I want to do as the wind drags by and Malcolm finishes up. And when he shuts his laptop and I hear the unmistakable silence of powered-off electronics, I close my thoughts, too, as he pulls me up by the waist, then scoops me up in both arms and takes me to bed. I have legs, I whisper sleepily. He gives me one of his toe-curling smirks.
Long, lovely ones, too.
His king bed is waiting for us, sprawled in the center of the room, kind of big, like him. He sets me down in bed, but I crawl away and slip into one of his shirts as he strips, while exhaustion weighs me down after the day. We settle into the bed a little bit. I crawl in and I plump the pillow and slide under the covers, and he joins me, flipping onto his back, pulling an arm above his head, relaxing as his free hand curls around my shoulders and presses me to his chest. I'm warm and soft inside, settling against him. The safe, warm nook in his arms. Gathered against his large, warm male body, contentment and peace flow through me, even as his body buzzes like it always does, with that never-ending thirst of his that I try to quench with me. And we kiss a little, and as the kiss starts to heat up, we end up fucking slow and easy, not talking, only the noises of kissing and skin touching, our breathing and the yacht engines. I almost choke when I orgasm. The pleasure is so intense I hold my breath for forever, then exhale and lie limp, surrounded by all of sin. He kisses me passionately when we're done, like he's grateful for my affection and my companionship and my desire of him. Then we cuddle, and I set my cheek against his chest and fall asleep, fast and easily, like only the warm and safe do. Him plus one. I wake up in Malcolm's arms Monday morning, and though I see there's a bit of light stealing through the drapes, I can tell there's still maybe 10 or 20 minutes to dress for work. Maybe I'll just stay right here forever. He's still in bed, his eyes closed, his dark hair in a delish rumpled mess. I shift my hip, lightly trailing my fingers up his chest, noticing the claw marks of my nails on his pecs. My eyes widen. What? Holy shit, did I do that? Welcome to the land of the crazy in love, Rachel. This may have been why you were so reluctant to move here. Grinning, I rub my fingers over the marks,
and his hand slides up my back. I lift my head in surprise. His lips are curled as he watches me.
I actually clawed you last night?
His voice is husky with sleep.
No, the girls who came in while you were sleeping did.
I smack his shoulder and he catches my hand, his voice deepening.
Come here.
Saint,
I breathe as he rolls over me. He reaches between us, sliding his hand down to cup me between my legs. Shivers run through me.
You had me 1,000 times last night.
Gruff whispers as he kisses and nibbles my ear.
Did I? It doesn't seem like enough.
Malcolm,
I push at his shoulder a little and edge up to sit. In 5 minutes, I need to get dressed for work.
You own your work.
Not yet. I haven't signed anything, and last you told me it's today at 2 p.m. In the meantime, I'm going to meet with my possible future team and start getting to work.
All right, Rachel,
he says, clearly indulging me.
I'll only take 4 minutes and 59 seconds.
He pulls me back down.
Malcolm, I laugh, then look at him, my smile fading. Are we really going for this? Your first monogamous, exclusive relationship?
His grin remains, but the glint in his eye turns serious. He nods, kisses my shoulder, then smiles softly down at me, brushing his thumb over my skin.
We're doing it, and I've got an 8:30.
After a quick shower, where it's hard to focus on just showering, I find myself sitting on the corner of his bed with a towel wrapped around my body. Just watching him, not even caring I'm going to be late. He's got 1,001 identical shirts and ties and jackets, and as he buttons the one he plucked off the hanger, I watch him become Malcolm Saint before my very eyes. My eyes taking in his every move, his nimble fingers zipping up his slacks, his muscles flexing as he slides a shiny leather belt around his narrow waist. He looks at me when he feels me watching, a dent appearing in his forehead as he frowns, as if he doesn't realize I'm just sitting here drooling my face off. Why can't it be like the cavemen times, when all that mattered was getting food and then we could gorge on each other and lock ourselves in here forever? But he doesn't want just the food. He wants the world, the moon, and apparently me.
Come here.
He pulls me up and I close my eyes, my toes curling when he sets a kiss that's almost chaste on my lips.
We're meeting the lawyers at 2 to make it official. Start planning your board, one that'll help you make your new venture whatever you had once dreamed Edge could be. Give yourself a team that will help you build the platform you need to put what's here, he taps my temple, out there,
he signals out the window. Laughing with a combo of pure raw nerves and excitement, I nod. He chucks my chin.
Have coffee with me before I go?
Yes.
I'm knotted up.
He twists his neck side to side as we walk out.
You really know how to tangle up a man in bed,
he says, patting my butt affectionately as we walk to the kitchen. I inspect every inch of him leisurely as he makes coffee and, trying to be a good girlfriend, I reach out to massage his hard shoulders. It doesn't last long. Easing behind me instead, coffee in one hand, me in the other, he stares out at Chicago like an overlord surveying his land. I lay my head back on his shoulder and let him rock me slightly as we look at the city. The city, the world, the horizon. I sense he has most of that, but he wants more. Everything we see out there, and what we can't see. Everything he thinks he can accomplish, he's going to get. When I go pour my coffee, I spot a crisp, white, posh-looking invitation on the kitchen island near one of his sets of car keys. It reads, Malcolm Saint, +1. I smile when I read the invitation to one of the city's grandest galas. Are we going? I ask his back.
We're always going.
He brings his coffee cup to the sink, his eyebrows drawing together as he looks at me.
And that smile?
I was just thinking that it's nice.
He kisses my temple.
Get a dress,
Saint, I have a dress.
Get one on me.
He sets down his credit card. I leave it on the granite counter, knowing he'll kick up a fuss when he sees that I didn't take it. I'm humming as I put the invitation back in place. I can't wait to see where our relationship is going. People speculate on what I am. His girlfriend, his four-month girl, his lover, his fling, his obsession, his one sole error in judgment, his mistake. They can call me whatever they'd like. It doesn't change anything. I'm his plus one, and he's my everything. Epilogue. Our life now. It's a busy day at Face. Face is my baby, brand new and still taking its first steps into publishing, both online and in print. I teased Malcolm about calling it that as a play on interface, and when he chuckled in that amused way of his that tells me he kind of liked what I just said, I knew it was the perfect name. Valentine, Sandy, and 12 other reporters are busy outside my office today. It's great, but it's difficult to be in the same building as the guy I'm dating. Sometimes I spot him leaving out the window, his hair and suit dark as the gleaming Rolls-Royce parked outside. Sometimes I watch him arrive from a business lunch, a conference, a board meeting at one of the multiple companies he advises. It's hard to keep my saint hormones from running wild. Sometimes we accidentally meet in the elevator as I ride up to my floor, and he rides to his. He's good at showing no emotion. But when our eyes lock, there's that inevitable spark I see light his green eyes. Our companions move as though by instinct to let him get close to me. We don't touch, at least I don't. But he sometimes stands so that our hands graze. Sometimes his thumb comes out for mischief, brushing the back of my finger, the tiniest bit. Other times, he laces our fingers for a heartbeat. A most delicious, achingly sensual heartbeat. And there was this one time when he hooked his pinky to mine and rode the entire way up to my floor, standing there, tall, quiet, among the bustle of people, nobody but me knowing that this man really loves me. Sometimes I go up to his office or he comes down, and somehow we both know why we're there. To talk, sometimes, but sometimes to be quiet. Super duper quiet, as he kisses my mouth red and red and red and simply coaxes me to promise him that I'll come over to his place tonight. At his place, we fuck all night long. In mine, we fuck quietly so that Gina doesn't hear us. It's perfect. I wouldn't change a single thing. Not of him, not of us. I took the leap, and Malcolm caught me. So we have this arrangement. During the week, we generally sleep at my place because I don't want Gina to feel lonely. The weekend, we're in his. This Thursday, he has offered to drive me home, but he makes a 5-minute stop at the bank. I stay answering some last emails on my phone and then peer curiously out the window when he comes out with one of the managers, who shakes his hand goodbye. Then he climbs on board and asks Claude to take us to his building. He's holding a suspicious envelope in one hand as he settles into the seat across from mine and slowly gets rid of his tie and tucks it into his jacket pocket. "This is so not the arrangement, mister," I chide him, scowling. He smirks.
"Are you mad at me now?"
"So absolutely mad," I exaggerate.
"I'll make it up to you, easy."
He leans forward and runs the pad of his thumb down my jawline.
"I have a surprise."
He waves the manila folder in his hand in the air, and the butterflies respond. "What is that?" I pry.
"Something."
"It's clearly something. But what?"
"Patience, grasshopper."
He leans back in the seat with his infuriating smirk, the very image of patience itself, and stretches his arm out behind him, a very self-satisfied look in his eye as he watches me squirm to find out his surprise. We head to the top of the building. At the very top,
there's a pool exclusive to the penthouse. It's an infinity pool where the water seems to blend out into the twinkling lights of Chicago. We've used this pool a couple of weekends, but this evening the luxurious white chaises have been removed. They have been vacated to make room for one lone table at the center platform that crosses the pool. Connected also to the pool is another platform featuring the only lounge area that seems to have been left untouched, the one Satan and I always sit in to enjoy the view. The paths toward both the table and the lounge are littered with electric candles that glow quietly as we pass. It's so breathtaking and so unexpected that I spin around with wide eyes. "So this is how you're making it up to me?" I catch him watching me a little too closely, and I kiss his jaw and whisper, "I like it. Make me mad again." His hand engulfs mine. Then he leads me forward to the lounge.
"Dinner comes after the surprise."
He sits me down on the larger couch and settles next to me, and then draws the envelope to his thigh.
"If my mother couldn't meet you, I thought you could still meet her."
He pulls out a 5x7 color photograph from inside and extends it to me. I feel a visceral reaction to the image of the woman I see, and the handsome teenager standing beside her, letting her wrap her arm around him even though he's already taller. I recognize him instantly. How can I not? I love him to pieces, every part of him. And I love that woman in the picture, simply because of the smile she's wearing and how lovingly she's holding him.
"She was reckless, spent money like her life depended on it," Malcolm tells me. "She was passionate and brave. And she loved me, despite everything."
He reaches into the folder again, and this time takes out a box with the name Harry Winston on it. He snaps it open, and there's this lovely, exquisite ring sitting proudly at its center. It's a round stone, super classical.
"When I was born, my father told her to go buy the biggest rock she could find to celebrate the birth of what could now only be their only son. She didn't buy the biggest rock. She bought the most perfect. D, internally flawless, 4.01 carats. She took off her engagement ring and wore this ring for as long as I can remember. When her leukemia was diagnosed, she told me she wanted to give me this ring. This was symbolic to her, for me. And she wanted my bride to have it. I told her there would be no bride to keep it. When I..."
He pauses, his expression troubled by the memory.
"When I came back from my skiing trip with the guys, I was given a folder with that picture she kept on her nightstand, a trust fund, and this ring."
As he lifts the ring, it refracts all the lights around us, sparkling rainbows.
"So I went to the bank, got it the biggest box I could find, and stored it, having no intention of ever opening that vault. But all I've been able to think of lately is getting this ring out of that vault."
He kisses my hand and slips it on.
"And onto your finger."
The ring slides easily onto my finger. It's a little big, and suddenly my finger feels just as heavy as my chest. Sin surveys my adorned hand, then looks up at me with this hopeful, loving gleam in those eyes of his. Eyes that used to be cold when I met him for the first time now look at me with the heat at the core of the earth. There's a smile on his lips, too, a smile so adorable it's almost boyish.
"Tie the knot with me. Be safe with me, reckless with me. Be who you are with me. Be my wife. Rachel, marry me."
My eyes get blurry and my lips are trembling as I purse them painfully because of his story. Because I'm wearing a ring on my finger. And he speaks.
"You once told me you wanted the world to stand still. You wanted a safe spot to stand still. I want to be that place for you."
His hands are almost swallowing my face, but it's his stare that swallows me most. Swallows me whole.
Even if I'm spinning through life, the spot beside me will be the eye of the hurricane, and nothing there can be touched or harmed. I want you here with me, beside me.
My breaths have become ragged, and I'm shaking all over in disbelief and happiness and emotion.
Have you ever wondered what a man in love looks like?
As confident as ever, he kneels, ducks his head, and kisses my naked hand.
This is what he looks like.
I break down and duck my face and bury it in his hair as a sob escapes me. I'm melting, swooning, dying. I should probably speak, but I'm struggling with a wet face and a clogged throat. His mother, the only other woman this man has ever truly loved before me. I feel so grateful to hear about her. I feel so humbled that he thinks me worthy of wearing this ring. Saint hears my sniffles and straightens back so he can dry my tears. I love my mother so much, I can't imagine how it must have hurt him to lose her. This, I struggle to explain, is what a woman in love looks like when the man she loves shows her he loves her, too. There's a deep texture in his voice when he lets out a breath and says,
"She looks lovely."
He starts to straighten and tucks his hands under my armpits. "What are you doing? What are you, Malcolm?" Laughing, he lifts me up to his eye level as he stands, lifts me up as if I weigh nothing, kisses me on the mouth.
"What does she say?"
He waits a little, eyes searching, impatient, anxious, claiming primal, male, Malcolm's.
"Rachel?"
he prods softly. I'm hyperventilating. You never told me you wanted. You were thinking. He takes my hand. I feel him rub the diamond under his thumb in a slow, languorous circle.
"I'm telling you with this."
He looks at me somberly. My reaction is visceral, instinctive. There is no doubt in my mind as I grab his shirt, boost up, and I'm shaking all over and press my mouth to his, answering with my wet kiss. He lifts me by the waist and my skirt hikes up as I curl my legs around him. "Yes," I breathe, grabbing his jaw in my hands and drowning in the lights inside those green forests of his that I swear to God contain the sun right now. He nuzzles my nose.
"Yes."
"Yes, Malcolm. Always yes." I press my lips to his. No tongue, just lips, and I squeeze my legs and arms around him as tight as I can as we hug. For a long time. Simply hold each other for a long time. The wind teases my hair, and I feel it wrap around our faces as we lean our foreheads against each other. I'm crying and laughing, and suddenly raining wet kisses all over his jaw, his temple, his forehead, his nose, his lips again. He stops me with his hands to look into my eyes.
"Two more times."
"You want me to say yes four times? God, what do you do when the man you love asks you something?" "You say yes. Four times yes." "What do you do when a saint loves you?" "You love him with all that you possess." "And what do you do when sin comes calling?" "You do him." Well, ladies, it's official. At Malcolm Saint is off the market, a.k.a. engaged. From now on, at Rachel Dibbs gets both the saint and the hashtag sinner. Fuck that bitch, I give it a month. What? Seriously, there's no way Saint can get sated with just one, ever. Is anyone else in mourning now that Saint's engaged? I'm having a severe case of blues. Are you still going to throw those big parties of yours at Malcolm Saint? The city won't be the same without you. At Malcolm Saint and at Rachel Dibbs, congratulations to the hottest couple I've ever seen. Please, please post pictures from the wedding. Post pictures of the honeymoon. Rachel, post pictures of Saint. From at Gigi Gina. So happy for my best friend. I'm still going to kick at Malcolm Saint's ass if he hurts her. From at Winleyland. My boyfriend and I are toasting tonight, celebrating. From at Callan Carmichael.
Well, like they say, never say never, cause guess who said never?
Hashtag Saint said never. At Malcolm Saint.
From at Tahoe Roth.
Now that Saint's off duty, at Callan Carmichael and I are doubling up on our duties to you ladies.
And then again from at Tahoe Roth. While our man and his bride have a honeymoon sex fest in a few months, we're having a sex fest and everyone's invited. This means you, Gina, at GG Gina. And from me. Fear not, at GG Gina. My fiancé knows how to take a woman to heaven and keep her there. Hashtag high in heaven. Hashtag high on sin.
Manwhore Plus One was written by Katie Evans and read by Grace Grant. Editing and post-production by like 2,000 pounds. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Manwhore Plus One is available in print from Gallery Books. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio by Katie Evans, Manwhore, read by Grace Grant.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.